Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. Tonight, it's all about the song and the songwriter. That's my focus tonight. My guest is James Lee Stanley, an amazing guitarist and songwriter. And I was going through the stuff the last couple of days and doing my research, and he's played with a bunch of people that I used to see when I was a kid. Like, he worked with John Batdorf in All Wood and Stones, Volume 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And he's just done some amazing thing. I was a big fan of Batdorf and Ronnie from the old days. But anyway, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Nice to be here, man. And thanks, Lori, for
You're welcome. Putting us together.
And give us a little bit of your background, because we're going to play a few clips and have you play live today. And
sure.
I think that that's important.
Me too. That's why I brought all this paraphernalia. I started out, I come from a musical family. My grandfather could play everything, and my mother sang great. And so music was always very mm-hmm. much an integral part of our family gatherings, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle gave me a ukulele when I was 12, and then he gave me a baritone ukulele because I got good in the ukulele pretty fast. And that's when, I still have that baritone ukulele. It's a
very
beautiful
cool.
mahogany thing. But I started playing on that, and then guitar, and then I never stopped. I just kept playing, and I've made, I think, 32 albums
wow.
so far. And I have done a couple albums with John Batdorf, and I've done... I started a label called Beechwood Recordings. I put out Lawrence Juber's first two albums on...
Yes.
Lawrence has been on the show.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, that's what he said, and he sends his regards, as I told you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I know. He's awesome.
He's a, great. Yeah, a wonderful player and a wonderful fellow. He and his wife are two of my favorite people.
Yep, I love Hope.
Yeah, she's only the best. She's really...
Very talented, too.
Yeah. In any event, you were saying something about the guitar and how it's become a voice in your intro. And it made me think of something that I don't think many people consider about guitar. Every instrument that I can think of, clarinet, piano, trumpet, all those, violin, they all have something between the sound and the person. There's a bow, there's a hammer, there's a valve, there's mouthpieces. The guitar is the only instrument, also the harp, I guess, where you touch both sides, this side and that side.
Mm-hmm.
So every single person that plays, plays differently. You know, this is, I think, the most expressive instrument there is because the most uniquely expressive instrument, because every single person brings their touch to both the forming of the chords and the attack of the strings,
yeah.
you know? And there's no other instrument that does that.
Yeah, the way you finger it, you know, if you vibrato or whatever, mm-hmm. is so... There's so many different, you know, expressions and subtleties that you can put into it. And then when you go and pick, finger pick or flat pick or...
Yeah, people that use their finger... I mean, do you know Rick Ruskin's work? Mm-hmm. I put out Rick's albums too, right around the time I put out Lawrence's, and he's another player that you hear two notes, it's Rick. You hear like Mark Knopfler, you hear two notes, that's
right,
Knopfler,
right. You know.
Well, Clapton, you can pick these people out even if you're not a guitar player because of this phenomenon that, mm-hmm. that they're coming from both ends. So I just wanted to get that out there.
The other thing too is guitar, it can function as a solo instrument. Like a clarinet, single line, mm-hmm. but it also can be an accompaniment, like piano. But guitar is even more expressive because piano, you can do a lot, not to disregard
piano.
Yeah,
not diminishing.
But it's basically hammers. But you know, there's just so much. I mean, just moving your hand and going near the bridge or mm-hmm. going to the
yeah.
neck.
Yeah, there's a million.
Which you do a lot.
I do.
And listen, you really work on the tone.
Well, I do mostly solo work. You know, I go out on the road by myself, and I try to change up the sound so it isn't. I get bored when I hear somebody that just does that for a half an hour. You know, mm-hmm. the same guitar sound and the same keys and I like to find all the different ways you can make noise mm-hmm. on this thing. You know.
Well, before I play a clip. Tell us a little bit about this guitar, because this is a beautiful guitar.
Oh, this is
drooling here.
Yeah, this is a 1993 Martin D28 Herringbone edition, and it has the that pre-war bracing that makes it sound like this. You know, and I told you, I think I bought it because of Neil Young's After the Gold Rush album. You open that album, there's Neil leaning on the sofa, blasting out of his mind, it looks like. And leaning against the corner of the sofa is a Herringbone Martin D28. And I lusted after it since the album After the Gold Rush came out. You know, what's funny is I bought this guitar, and 2 months later, a wonderful man who was a fan of mine for years gave me a Collings HD2, which is a Herringbone.
Mm-hmm.
It's like modeled on the pre-war Martins, and it costs more than my car, and he just gave it to me because he said, you're my favorite guitar player. So now I have two guitars that look just like this.
Oh, those Collings are really beautiful guitars.
It's fabulous. It's fabulous. I didn't bring it because I let somebody use it, pick it up, and they dropped it, and it got a crack in it. I sent it back down to Collings to get them to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
My heart was broken. I really wanted to maim this person and their children, but I didn't.
Okay.
Well, since you're talking about guitars, conspicuously in that corner, tell us about this one.
Oh, that's a guitar made by David Russell Young. He and Mark Whitebrook were guitar makers in the late 60s and early 70s in Topanga Canyon. And that's David's modeled after a D28 as well, although it's got a redwood top. So it has a slightly different sound. Then it's a Brazilian rosewood and redwood top. This is Indian rosewood and a spruce top. And my Collings is Brazilian rosewood and Adirondack spruce. You know, so they all sound. I also have a 41 Gibson J50 that is a mahogany that sounds great. I keep buying one more guitar, but I know my wife thinks it's over now. You have enough.
It's never over. But
she doesn't understand the mind of a guitar player.
No.
Well, they all sound
always need
different.
One more.
Well, I'm going to play a clip here.
Sure.
And I want this. I'm going to play. This is from the album The Apocaloptimist, and I'm going to show it there on the Facebook Live. And
which is your latest, right?
Right.
It's the latest
yes.
studio album.
And this
we
is
love
an,
the cover too. So beautiful.
What I want to stress,
thank you,
is that the album, they're songs, and they're well-developed songs, and they're singing and stuff, and the guitar is, and we'll talk a little bit about how the guitar supports that, but I pulled clips to show the guitar
okay.
part, so I want everybody to know there's a lot more to the songs, but this is an edited clip, and I wanted to show the interplay, because I was mentioning before the show to James, the clips that this album especially, the bass playing on this is amazing.
There is a absolutely brilliant bassist right here in Los Angeles. He's out in the West Valley, and where I used to live, Woodland Hills area, Canoga Park.
Mm-hmm.
I think he lives in Northridge, and his name is Chad Watson, and he plays the best bass I've ever
we
heard.
We love Chad. Chad's in the tribe.
Yeah, he's a magnificent player,
plays
wonderful man, a dear friend, and And it's so funny, when I bring him in the studio, I just tell him, I say, you know what, here's what I want. I said, play me a groove version of the song, and he comes out with something great. I go, okay, now play me something really simple, you know, stupid. And he plays that, and then I say, and now play whatever you want. And then usually from those three tracks, because I like it to develop, you know what I mean? So I'll work with the simple and then have it evolve. But I could have used any one of the tracks he did, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just that I have my own ego and my own control of stuff, you know. And plus, I really know what I want to hear. And right. I never told him what to play.
Mm-hmm.
I don't tell any musicians what to play. I feel like I can play everything. If I want to hear it, I'll play it, you know what I mean? What are you going to contribute? What are you going to bring to the party that I wouldn't even think of, you know? So when I produce, I always get the best people, and then I try to get out of their way.
Well, it's interesting because he, like a guitar player, you'll sing or do something, and he'll do like a riff.
Yeah.
He riffs a lot. And I'm going to apologize now because later I'm going to play another piece where there's a bass solo. Because even though we're focusing on your songwriting stuff, I have to play it because it's one of the coolest.
Just do it. Do it.
So, well, let me play Living the Party Life first.
Okay.
And take a listen to this, and then I want to talk a little bit of your tone because you really get some interesting the sound of your guitar is just absolutely beautiful. So here's Living the Party Life.
Chad right there at the end.
Yeah, that was Chad.
No, it's just...
And that was Stephen Bishop in the background vocals.
Oh, Steve, we had him on the show, too.
We did.
Yeah, that's what he said.
But that bass, it's just great. He's doing those chords and those... Oh, man.
Yeah, nice edit, the way you put that together. It was very tasty.
Thank you.
I'm surprised he knew it was the very beginning, because when I'm playing that... and he gives in... You know, it's this amazing thing. And it was like first take. He just went...
Well, no, the temptation was to play all of that, but the clip would have been like 3 minutes, and there's so much to pack through. And actually, what I'm going to do right now, before we start talking about the sounds, let me go ahead and play the one with the bass solo in it, Last Call, because it's just, since we're talking about the bass, we might as well play both of them and show you, but this is really cool.
And that's Chad Watson.
This is Chad Watson.
Sunset kissed the bay. We left the karaoke. We toasted one and all. It seemed as though no time had passed until we heard the last call. Last call. salty kisses on our lips, and Jose Cuervo's grin.
Just, that's some of the tasty, well, the whole album is just taste. It's just tasty stuff. And, well, let's talk a little bit about your, what were you using on those songs? Was that the Martin?
It was several guitars. Because I play all the acoustic guitars, I've got a Taylor 810 CE that I use for a lot of leads because it's just got the fastest neck. It's so easy to play. And I use my Collings, and I used this Martin. So it was the three guitars in different places. And Chad is playing, of course, his Fender bass.
That's a Fender bass?
Yeah. Yeah, just a, and I use a
great sound. Is that direct?
I was going to say, yes, I use a James Demeter preamp, tube direct, and I plug Chad into that, and I plug him in. And because I have my own studio, you know, I lay down my guitars first and a vocal, and then I bring in the bass and drums and have them play together, you know, against what's there, and then I replace what I played. Well, now that I have those guys, I can do more conversational interplay, you know what I mean?
Well, I noticed in your writing, there's a lot of interplay. The guitar, it's not just an accompaniment. It kind of just, it like answers. There's like
I try to orchestrate with the guitar as opposed to just playing the guitar in the song. You know what I mean? And that's partially because I play by myself and partially because I've always, I don't know that this is what anybody else does. Maybe everybody does this. I don't know. But what I like to do is I like to write lyrics that could be all by themselves a poem and stand like that. And I like to write melodies that could just be melodies and they would stand. And I like the guitar part to be able to just be a guitar part if there's no singing with it. You know what I mean? When I play that stuff.
Yeah, very melodic. Beautiful.
I'd orchestrate. So
yeah, no, that's the thing.
When I do classes, I talk about that a lot.
Even though you're singing, the guitar is very melodic. With you have your melody of your song, but it's like a counter melody, so to speak.
Well, you know, they did a computer analyzation of all the great composers in the world, and all the Western, and they all have a signature, a compositional signature, and the computer could recognize which composer it was. They'd play a little bit for the computer after the computer analyzed the way everything was written, and every single composer has a unique compositional signature. And I think that is obviously true of all of us, you know, and the fact that I compose on the guitar, so I think I have like two signatures. I've got my vocal signature, the way I write melodies, and I've got this, the way I play the guitar, which seems to be not like, there's thousands of fabulous guitarists, but not many that play the way I do. Not many guitarists that play the way
I do. It's interpretive.
Yeah, it really is, you know.
But it supports the song. There's a difference.
Oh, yeah, no,
it's a difference when you're like a soloist and you're like, you.
No, everything has to serve the song. All the guitar parts have to serve the song, you know.
Well, why don't you go ahead and, if it's okay, play something live to kind of demonstrate that, give an idea of something.
Sure. There's a song called Worry About You. I'll show you just like a chorus and a verse. And the verses are like, just heard from someone you up and left home. Didn't say where you were going, you just struck out on your own. You said you wanted everyone to leave you alone. But I worry about you, yes, I worry about you. I can't help it, I do. I worry about you. Don't you know I worry? So when I'm just playing the verses, I'm pretty much doing the roots, da la la da, and whole notes, and then when I start strumming, it sounds like the band came in, you know? It's what you do when you can't afford a band.
But you do some interesting the type of the style, the little fills that you do are really memorable. I'll give you a little clip of one. Well, let's see which one. I have one where the intro shows. I'm thinking which one is it right now. Oh, here it is. Last All Night. Let me play this one. And in the opening, you can hear this really, it's a very cool opening. Let me play it.
Sure, go ahead.
That bass again. It's
lovely. That's Chad.
No, now you were just saying when I started playing the clip and I muted the mic, you were using a Guild Classical.
Yeah, a mahogany Guild Classical I've had since 1963, and I wanted to have that different guitar, you know, for this part.
But that the lead later is the...
No, the lead later is the Martin.
The Martin. It's a... I mean... But again, you can see all the different influences.
Oh, no. I trade leads there with a man named James Hurley. Mm-hmm. And James was playing a Larrivee. That... La-da-da-da-da-da was James playing a Larrivee. James Hurley. Wonderful friend and wonderful musician.
Really talented.
Yeah. Good guy, too.
This song, like, it just sounds like you need to get it to James Taylor.
I would love for that to happen.
The party of James's.
No, it's just, but it's all throughout the album, and I can't stress this enough on Apocalypse Optimist, is there's so many different little things that you're doing. They're just cool little things. And playing as a solo artist by yourself, it forces you to do interesting things. You're orchestrating live what you're doing. So you're doing these cool little things. And it's a lot of albums now, because they're programmed and sequenced and stuff, you lose a little bit of that type of, because it's, yes, you're recording it and you have a preconceived idea, but it feels more organic, more spontaneous to me.
Yeah, I think that has to do with the fact that I choose really good musicians and I get out of their way, you know what I mean? Because if you impose your will on them, play it more like, you know, can you play it like Eric Clapton? You know, you do that kind of stuff, you limit their imagination. If you nurture their confidence, my God, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and to tell you the truth, sometimes I just, like, I'll send a track over to my percussionist and say, just play what you want. And Lawrence, I send a track to Lawrence, and I say, here's three songs, pick mm-hmm. one and do what you want to it. I mean, Lawrence played on that song, I forget what it's called. It's on Apocalypse Optimist. Watching the highway line wind easy. Mm-hmm. Lawrence is playing the lead. I played the 12-string lead, and Lawrence played the...
Let's play that.
Oh, okay.
It's called Etude in E minor.
No, that's a...
That's not
song.
It?
But go ahead, play that.
Because that one's the one I heard the 12-string in.
Oh, well...
And there was electric guitar playing against you. Well, let me play it. Let me
play it.
It's very cool, and this is a great. And he's got a story about the 12th string. So here's Etude in E minor. Muted. That is that's Lawrence playing the electric.
Yes, and the song is called Highway 23. I think the next song is the Etude.
That one's called
Highway 23. The one we just played. That
it is.
Yes, I wouldn't lie to you.
Okay, because now no, it was the MP3 said Etude, but here's.
Oh, it did.
That's it did.
Well, then that's entirely my fault.
Because the Highway 23 is all guitar instrumental, right?
No, that's the Etude.
Ah, yeah, there's. I caught something.
So, yeah, I'll have to go on the site and.
Yeah, no, it's in the MP3, the label of the MP3. I'll play the Highway 23 in just 1 second, but before that, tell about
that. Highway 23.
That was Highway 23. So
yeah, whoever put those together for me mislabeled them.
So, in Highway 23, tell the story about the 12 string. Which 12 string is this? This is very cool.
Paul Barrera lives around the corner from me, and he's. Extraordinarily wonderful musician and person. I just love him. And Little Feet. He also, he and Fred Tackett also go as a duo and tour around. They're a wonderful, wonderful player. And I just said, geez, I need a 12 string on this. And he said, I've got a 12 string. And I said, great, can I borrow it? He said, yeah, take it. Use it as long as you want. I mean, I think I had it for like 3 months or something. I couldn't let go, but it's an old Martin, like pre-1970 12 string or something. It sounds like a piano. You play it.
No, it has that tone.
Yeah.
Now, was that tuned to D or was that a tuned full concert?
No, that was a concert pitch.
That's pretty, yeah. That's a beautiful.
Yeah, although that does make the strings hard, you know.
I have a Guild 12 string and I have two truss rods, so I can keep the action low. I was just wondering if that was pulling up.
Yeah, you know what? Now that I think about it, he might have it down to D, and I don't use a capo myself.
Right, because most people at Martin's keep it at D because it's just so much tension on the neck.
I think that might have been the case. I don't know because I can't remember now. I'm in the studio every day doing something that kind of.
That's a great sound. And then what was. What was Lawrence using?
You know, I believe he was using his Martin, but electrified, you know. And then he did two things. So there's two guitars in there. One is an acoustic lead and one is an electric lead. And I don't know what electric guitar he used because if you've ever been to his studio, there's 30 guitars lined up against the wall.
And everyone has a story.
Yeah. And so I don't know which one he used. I only know that his contribution was really magnificent. You know what was funny in that song? When I started it, I had all, I had everything, the drums, the keyboard, and playing. And I thought I love the intro, but then it just gets too messy. So it starts out with that, with the whole band going, da, 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 this big thing. And then I took everything out. It goes down to watching the highway line wind easy. And I keep it out until the bridge. And then I do this terrific drum fill and the whole band kicks in and the song explodes. And I don't know.
The way you use the drums and how you bring them in is great because it's dramatic. I mean, it's very dramatic when how you place it.
Do you remember the T for the Tiller Man album by Cat Stevens?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah, it was produced by Paul Samwell Smith. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I ever heard somebody make a record where they would use the drums when they felt like it. Because everybody, particularly drummers, said, well, once I'm in,
once they start.
Yeah.
And I like...
Well, it's orchestrated.
Sparseness.
Well, I mean, I like the full thing, too, but I like the texture to change. Yeah. If you listen to that record, the texture changes about every 8 bars, so that it's always some little ear hook for you, some little thing that, this is different now. That just it keeps evolving, which I, you know, I mean, I listen to music. When I'm listening to music, I'm not doing anything else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now it's just people using
Paul Samuel Smith, who did he did? Was it the Animals?
He was in the Animals, I think.
Okay, because he was, yeah, he's got a pedigree. Like.
And and I actually wanted him to produce me a while ago. I mean, like 30, 40 years ago. The same with Justin Howard, actually. Mm-hmm. Justin Hayward.
Justin Hayward.
Yeah, he when I was with Jerry Weintraub, he was managing me for a minute there. And he was also managing the Moody Blues.
The reason I'm wearing this shirt because they finally got inducted to the Hall of Fame, and it's well deserved.
Yeah. Wow,
I'm a big he was a big influence.
He's a great player
in the Moody's.
He's a great player, I wanted him to produce me. I thought he would do a good job, but it never happened. I know that I used to get really blasted and listen to Days of Future Past. Mm.
Love that album.
Just lie there.
Well, that changed my life. That got me into orchestration. That's the first.
You know, there wasn't really, they call it some orchestra, but I produced Mike Pinder from the Moody Blues. I produced a couple of cuts on him, and he said there was no orchestra. They just put together some string players and made it up.
I mean, oh, for the festival orchestra. Yeah. It was a studio orchestra.
Exactly.
But it was a full orchestra.
It was a full orchestra, but
they had everybody in there.
But it wasn't a... It wasn't a regular orchestra that they went and hired
like
that orchestra.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a unit. They just brought a bunch of guys in, and somebody wrote magnificent charts, and they played their asses.
Yeah.
Have you ever done a studio thing with those string guys? They're so amazing. I was doing an album.
String writing.
I had hummed the lines to Jimmy Haskell. You remember Jimmy? Great string arranger. Did Bookends, did Bridge Over Troubled Water. He's like that kind of guy. Anyhow... He came in there with these charts, and we were playing something, and I said, you know, Jimmy, and he said, you want to conduct it? And I said, yes. So I got the conductor, Sid Sharp's sharp strings, you know, and they played this one thing, and I said, you know, guys, when we get to bar 34, I said, you know, right now it's just a couple of a quarter. I said, can we do it like a dotted quarter and an eighth there? And they said, sure. And they all went, ch-ch-ch. And then they simply did it, like, the next time. And I'm thinking, when I do it, it's like 17 takes. Oh, crap, I forgot it was a dot, you know. And they just... They
have it down.
They read.
But they like to see it.
Yeah, they do like to see it. But they can read that the way
everything.
You can read English.
Yes,
you know?
Of course.
It's really magnificent.
That is their English.
No, I was reading about the Days of Future Past album, and he wrote those charts, Peter Knight. Literally, like in a couple of days.
Wow.
And I mean, that if you've listened to the album Days of Future, that whole opening suite that he does.
Isn't that magnificent?
He does all of that stuff. He wrote that like.
I
never could be that fast in scoring. I mean, he scored all that in those orchestra textures and all that stuff. It's just amazing.
But when you write that, they become just like people that write computer language. You know, that when that becomes your language, it's just not. I mean, it's not as daunting as it would be.
No, you're fluent. So.
Yeah. With me, I'm like humming the lines and then figuring, let's see, that's a quarter. No, that's
yeah, I mean, I'm not fast, but I mean, it was interesting.
Yeah, let's try it out. Yeah.
Yeah, right. No, that's not it. You know, 7,000 times.
Pencil.
But let me go ahead and then play the real etude in E minor. I was originally going to put this as the outro, so I have a longer version. I'll fade it out after a little while because it's over 2 minutes.
Do whatever you want.
But let's play a little bit so you can, and then you can explain a little bit because I'm going to have James play live to take us out. So here's etude in E minor, and I think it's towards the last 2 minutes or something. Let me see.
We'll see. Thank you.
So you get a good, that's a good example of how he kind of teases us with the drums. They just do a break and then they lay back again.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't about the drums.
I know. Yeah.
Was that Mara? Who was on the harp?
Corky Siegel. I can't remember how I did that.
Who played drums?
I programmed them.
Those are programmed?
Yes.
That's amazing.
How about that, listeners?
They sounded good to me. That's great.
Oh, yeah, I did. Sometimes I use... if I use a percussionist, I use Scott Bredman, who's a wonderful player.
We know Scotty.
Oh, yeah, okay. And but on that song, can I see the album?
Mm-hmm. Scotty's look at it. Gary Stockdale's percussionist, too.
I'll remember, I think. Oh, no, he's not on this record, so it's me. Yeah, I did all the percussion and the 12-string, the classical guitars, the keyboards, the lead vocals, and the acoustic guitar.
So that's the real Etude in E minor. That's a great song.
Thank you. Yeah,
it's a
Corky
great,
Siegel's
it's a,
on
it's
the
a
harmonica.
Great mood.
Yeah, I thought.
And
was,
this is the album. I'm gonna show it up again though.
I've submitted it to about 15 movies, but so far, no one has been as enthusiastic as you, Jeff.
Well,
but they will, because you know it
they
just
will.
Takes.
No, it's a good take. I mean. You just got to get it to so that all the music supervisors are aware of it. I could hear that in a lot of stuff on both television and film. So, but it's beautiful. Now, let's talk a little bit because we're getting close to the end.
Really?
Let's talk. Yeah, it goes by. I told you it would go by
fast.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about your live rig.
Since sure.
Because he brought a bunch of cool stuff with us.
I use an RC20 looping box, and I use a Boss ME50 which is a multiple effects pedal board. And I use it very often in the show, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like to change up sometimes. And sometimes I like to do stuff like the looping box. You can sometimes I'll put a chorus and a verse in the looping box.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll play some bass over that. I mean live. And then I'll play lead over that. And, you know, so there's like a little ensemble for one tune.
Would you do a little demo?
Sure. You know what? I did an album called All Wood and Doors with my pal Cliff Eberhart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all Doors songs done acoustically. And I'll show you this little bit. I wonder. No, that's too long. We don't have that much time. I'll tell you what. This is another song. It's called Fairweather Town, the one I was working on. And it's I use a little riff and then I play over it. So... So now the looping box is playing that, and I play something else. Freeway is anything but free tonight. Traffic is backed up for miles. Place else, this was simply barren. LA, it's just not their style. Now it's the same rap with the chord chain. Total disaster, and they hear it on the news. While this wind up city runs down. But when you consider business as usual, another change. LA is a fair weather town. Like that.
That's cool, right?
That's great. And it's clever what you're doing with the riff that's going through there. It works with all the chord changes.
Yeah, it took me a while to figure out the record is slightly different than that. But once I got it, you know, when you go on stage and you want to do it, it's like, how can I do this, you know? There's a song on Backstage at the Resurrection. All my album titles seem to be designed either for you to not be able to say them or to offend you in some deep way. Because when I did the Backstage at the Resurrection, my wife went, "What are you, insane? You want Christians to eat you for lunch? You can't have an album called Backstage at the Resurrection."
Well, I have to show the album cover because the front of it, everything's backwards. So when I was looking, I'm like,
Yeah, that's because you're backstage. Yes, so the marquee is out front, great. You know. So there's a tune there called I Can't Cry Anymore. I'll show you how it goes. Oh. I can't cry anymore. I can't cry anymore. I can't cry anymore. I'm all of the tears. What the people say and the people do, there's a major difference when you look between the two. Yes, I trusted you, got hung out to dry, because to you the truth is just an undisputed lie. And I can't cry anymore. I can't cry anymore. I can't cry anymore. Oh, a lot of tears. And then Lee. Oh, by the way, I'm playing, April 27th.
Oh, we do that at the end of the show.
Okay, yeah, okay, right. Good. April 27th with my pal Rick Ruskin at the Coffee Gallery backstage in Pasadena, or Altadena, I mean. Anyhow, that's the kind
that's
of looping stuff
very
I do.
Cool. I love that. I just want to point out is that as a guitar player, too, you're a pretty amazing guitar player. Those are great riffs that you're...
Yeah. Oh, little,
the leads are just tasty. Again, well, that's the best way to describe you.
Thank you. I've considered it a shortcoming because I've gotten together with people like Lawrence, you know, who can play extemporaneous stuff right off the top of their head.
He's in a class all...
That are magnificent. Yeah. And I have to tell you, I know every note I'm going to play. I write everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I rarely, now, actually, because I've been playing 50 years, I'm starting to, at the end of songs, I'll just, well, let's see what happens, you know. But mostly I want to make sure, if you're on stage, it's no time to be noodling, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so you're basically trying to reproduce what you did in the,
well,
on the album?
Well, at least it has to be entertaining, it has to be authoritative, and it has to be musical, you know.
And it's amazing. I mean, but you really, you've been influenced by all these great players. You actually can hold your own. I mean, I have to admit, when you have Chad playing on bass, you don't really need to do much because he's doing it.
No, he can do. When I first started playing with him, I used to take no solos because what's the point?
I mean, he's just amazing. I love his stuff. But all of those guys. But you do really. You do play great.
I practice every day for hours, you know. I mean,
yeah, when he came in before the show, he was going at it in the waiting room.
Yeah, I always, like when I do a gig, I mean, the sound check is at 6 o'clock. I get to the gig at 5 o'clock. I sit in the room and play till they say, sound check, Mr. Stanley, I come and I play the sound check. And then I go back in the room and I play until I go on.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes another hour and a half, 2 hours. Mm. But that's because I used to play all those bars. And I'd go in there and start singing at 8 o'clock. And by 8:20, I'm thinking, I'm the worst musician that ever lived. I can't sing. I can't play. This is caca. But then after an hour of playing, I start getting warmed up. And then, you know, like an hour and a half later, I'm starting to be really good. And by 10 o'clock, I think I'm God. You know, I'm singing my ass off, you know, and I'm loving everything. And then when I started opening up for people, I discovered that I was singing great on the way home, you know?
Yeah,
and so I thought, no, I've got to get to that place before
the
spotlight goes on.
Yeah.
You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Of course.
So what I discovered is that if I play for hours, I get really good. So that's what I do.
Really
before,
warmed up.
Before every show, you know.
Now, I'm going to try to squeeze in one extra clip because I want to preview something that your next album.
Oh, sure.
You gave us a sneak peek.
Yeah, it's called Without Susie, the new album.
Without Susie. So I'm going to play this clip real quick, and then we'll go into what your the gigs that are happening, and then we'll have you take us out with a song.
Sure.
But here's this one's called Hey, Look at You, and there's something really cool on this. We'll talk about it right after the clip, but here, take a listen. Now, what's interesting is he's playing these guitar parts and he's doubling it with vibraphone, which is really cool vibes.
On some of them, yeah. On some of the parts, yeah, it's true.
It's very cool. And I haven't heard that. We were talking about that. Neil Young did that on the Buffalo Springfield.
Yeah, that's true.
On the way home.
Well, the deal is all the great classical composers used to combine instruments to get a sound that neither of the instruments made, you know. So that was, you know, I mean, I studied orchestration and arranging at LECC and at Cal State. Out there in Northridge, so
yeah, Ravel especially, Bolero. That was a classic.
Yeah. I was aware of that kind of thing, so I just like to combine noises. I mean, on the beginning of the guitar is doubled with a piano.
Yeah,
you know, da 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 da, just to get a different noise. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, real quick, mention the gig again.
Okay, I'm playing April 27th at the Coffee Gallery in Altadena. And I'm also playing at the Dylan Fest on May the 6th down in Torrance. And I'm playing June 9th at the Boulevard Music in Culver City. So I've got three gigs coming up in the next 2 months. If you didn't write them down, you can just write me, James.
That's your local gigs.
JamesLeeStanley.com.
There's listeners everywhere. So
oh, okay.
If there's anything really, you know,
yeah, well, I'm going to be in Chicago the weekend of the 10th, 11th, and 12th, playing Chicago, Milwaukee, Madison, and Rockford. And then the following weekend, I'll be in North Carolina. And then...
What are these? Are they house concerts or
no,
venues?
Venues. The Shank Hall in Milwaukee, the Spirit Center in Rockford, Cafe Carp in Fort Atkinson, which is about 20 miles from Madison. And... I don't remember what Chicago is. Sorry.
And check then the website.
Yeah. And I'm playing the Southeast Folk Alliance. Southeast.
Oh, very cool.
I'm doing a showcase, this official showcase there. And then I'm in Colorado playing a house concert and also playing
He's West everywhere.
Country. Yes.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Between him and Freebo, they're like all over.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, for 72, we're, you know, I'm holding up.
No, but the album's Apocaloptimist. Here it is right here.
See, Apocaloptimist.
Apocaloptimist. I actually got it right.
You did, the first
time. I fumble with words, as Lori knows. I'm terrible.
You nailed got this
that.
One every
I
time.
I get this one.
Perfectly.
And Lori, anything else you want to mention that's happening?
We've got Rosemary Butler is going to be back at Bogey's on April 26th, which is a Thursday evening. And the Tribe is doing a show at Bogey's also on May 6th. And that is, we're covering two Eagles albums.
Oh, very cool.
Start to finish. Desperado and On the Border. Like, really strong, rich, beautiful harmonies, and we're really looking forward to showcasing what we do as the Tribe. So those will be fun. Tickets are on sale for both of those shows at Bogey's.
James, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is really an honor to have you here. This is awesome. Yeah. I mean, I just, I can't express enough just the songs and the just taste. It's just a show of tone, great tone.
Thanks, man. Thank you very much.
And Lori, thank you.
You're welcome.
As I said on Facebook,
I knew it would be a great one.
Thank you. Yeah, Lori is the one that did this.
Yeah, somebody asked, how do you get all these great guests? I go, it's Lori, it's not me.
It kind of starts with doing my songwriter shows. I do these showcases and, I bring in a few people at a time, and then one thing kind of leads to another thing. We want to do more together and...
Well,
we
definitely have to have you back. So when this album, Without Susie, comes...
By the way, people said, why is it called Without Susie? And I said, well, there's nobody named Susie on the album, so I thought that...
Oh, no.
No, but dig this. It's actually because there's a French expression, sans souci. And it means, without problem, without hassle.
Oh, okay.
No problem. And I thought, sans souci, sans is without, and I thought, without souci... Without Susie. Oh, I like it. And so I decided to call it, because it's like no problem.
Yeah. No, I think that's great.
Without Susie. I love it.
So I'm going to let you take us out.
Okay.
And everybody, thank you again, Lori. And everybody have a great week. We'll see
show
you
that
next
album
week.
Again. Maybe show another one, too.
Well, this one, it'll look like it's reversed.
How many albums you said?
30.
You got to check the website. Check that website and
get
what
you have these
you.
Two right here. Well, here's you can actually read it on the back. So, but these are cool, very cool.
So, do you want an instrumental? Is that it?
You can sing. Do a song. You're a songwriter.
Oh,
let's just do a song.
Sure.
All right, I'm going to mute our microphones and just let you go.
Okay. Can I do a song I didn't write?
Sure.
Okay. I always do this song at every show because I think it's important now that we have a con man in the White House. Many's the time I've been mistaken, and many times confused. Yes, I've often felt forsaken, and certainly misused. But I'm all right, just weary to my bones. Still you can't expect to be bright and bon vivant with a con man on the throne. There's a con man on the throne. I don't know a soul who's not been battered. Don't have a friend who feels at ease. Don't know a dream that's not been shattered or driven to its knees. But I'm all right, we've lived so well, so long. Still when I think of the road we're traveling on, I wonder what's gone wrong. Can't help it, I wonder what's gone wrong. And I dreamed I was dying. I dreamed that my soul rose unexpectedly, and looking back down at me, smiled reassuringly. Dreamed I was flying, and high up above my eyes could clearly see the Statue of Liberty sailing away to sea. And I found I was crying. We come on the ship they call the Mayflower. Come on the ship that sailed the moon. We come in the age's most uncertain hour and sing this American tune. But I'm all right, no one's forever blessed. Still tomorrow's gonna be another working day.
We can only do our best. Have we really done our best?
Oh, that was so
great. Paul Simon wrote that after Watergate. Wow. And it's still prevalent. It breaks my heart.
Great,
great, great songwriter.